My name is Amy Purdy. After losing both of my legs at the age 19, I bounced forward to become a three-time Paralympic medalist, one of Oprah's top 100 thought leaders, a New York Times bestselling author, a Dancing with the Stars runner-up, and a world-renowned motivational speaker. I also host this podcast, Bouncing Forward, where I invite the most inspiring and motivating people on the planet to talk with me about what it takes to survive, thrive, and figure out the possibilities. This episode is the second of a four-episode series called We Have a Goal. In just a moment, you'll be meeting some amazing young leaders building incredible projects that address the global issues of equality, inclusivity, sustainability, and today's important subject, peace building. Each person is taking action to create positive change in those important areas using sports. I am so honored that the International Olympic Committee has asked me to introduce you to these amazing young leaders. I promise that you will leave each episode inspired and encouraged. I want to take a second to acknowledge Panasonic. Panasonic is the founding partner of the IOC Young Leaders Program, and they are the sponsors of this episode. They are absolutely committed to giving the IOC Young Leaders support to not only do great work, but also to share it with the world. Thank you, Panasonic. Today's episode is being released on April 6th, the International Day of Sport for Development and Peace. You are about to meet Sophia, an Olympian from Cyprus, Walid from Jordan, and Mercedes from Guatemala. They are each using sports to bring people together and encourage the rebuilding of communities, leading to peace building at the local and global levels. One of my favorite parts of being an athlete on the international competitive circuit was the time that I spent with other athletes from all parts of the world. And although we were competitors and we competed against each other, we were all working for the same goal: to grow the sport of Paralympic snowboarding and show the world what the possibilities are. And when you're working together towards the same goals, everything else falls away. This Paralympic season, I witnessed firsthand how peace-building sports can be when two of our athletes that train with my organization competed at the Paralympic Games. These two athletes are very competitive. They are in the same disability class. They competed against each other for a spot on the team. They are very different, and day to day, they really don't get along at all. So the level of tension at times between them is tangible. However, they were both competing for Team USA, and one of them brought home a silver medal. And the coolest part of watching that moment was the other athlete was so excited for him. They ran up to each other, they hugged each other, they cried, they were patting each other on the back. The way that these two embraced each other was true sportsmanship. This is just one very small way that sport promotes peace building, but today you're going to listen to how it can also help bring different cultures together, bring different communities together, and how it can change perspectives. Sophia is an Olympic alpine skier and a doctor from Cyprus. Her Young Leaders project is so amazing. It involves bringing together cultures within her country using sport, specifically sailing. The final challenge for this group of new friends will be to sail around the island of Cyprus, and Sophia wants to film the entire project and create a documentary.
My name is Sophia Papamichalopoulos. I'm from Cyprus, but I'm also half Austrian. And my IOC Young Leaders project is all about promoting peace in my country, in Cyprus. I want to do that through sport and specifically through sailing.
So you're bringing together three different cultures of people. Why those three?
So Cyprus is a country that has always been very multicultural due to its geographical position. The two biggest communities are Greek-speaking and Turkish-speaking. Cyprus was actually a British colony up to the 60s, 1960s. And when it became independent, there started to be a lot of conflict between the Greek and Turkish speaking communities. There was actually a war in 1974 where Turkey invaded half the island. And then that actually led to the communities being completely separated. So before the war, they were actually living throughout the island. And then after the war, all Greek-speaking people had to move to the south and all Turkish-speaking had to move to the north. So through my project, I'm bringing together those two communities, so the Greek-speaking and the Turkish-speaking.
What got you involved with peace building in sports?
Just alone the fact that I grew up in a country that was divided by a war, and my father and his family were refugees themselves. I actually remember the conflict still being present when I was really young. And it wasn't until 2003 that the border that divided the two communities actually opened up. And even though the border has opened and there's been political peace talks for years, for decades, I still see or believe that there's not enough happening on a community level. I really believe that that lack of interaction is keeping the border up, because when you do see the communities interacting, you actually do see them having a positive experience and finding similarities. I grew up in a quite open-minded family, and I had my first bicommunal experience when I was 16. I went on a Fulbright summer camp with Greek and Turkish-speaking Cypriots, which was a really eye-opening experience for me, getting to know the other perspective of the conflict, how sport just has this power to unite people. You know, when kids play sports, it doesn't matter anymore where they're from, what language they speak, or what religion they have. It's all about the experience. And one situation that really inspired me and kind of triggered my project was I was in Pyeongchang at the Winter Games when Korea marched in under one flag. And I just related to that a lot. I just thought it was such a powerful moment.
I mean, I think it's so fascinating when you think, and just how you explained how everybody was together. You all came from the same place, same country, but then it got separated. And now it's just trying to put together those bridges. I mean, there's nothing better than sport to do that.
I absolutely agree, yeah.
So why sailing?
So I grew up by the sea. And my family and I, we all sailed. I actually sailed competitively when I was younger. Well, I actually then went into competitive alpine skiing. It's a whole different story. But I don't know, thinking about this project, we're an island. I wanted to bring the ocean closer to the people and use something that might also have the power to bring people together. Also, one of the biggest goals of this project is for a team of Cypriots from both communities to sail around the entire island, which is unique in a lot of ways. It'll be a challenge for them physically and mentally to actually achieve this. It'll help them develop as a team and create trust between each other. But it's also very unique in that no one has ever crossed the maritime border since the war. So that will be a huge achievement for the project, for the team, and it'll have a huge symbol for the country.
Is the goal to have kind of one sailing team that does that, or is this going to be kind of a program that continues on?
Hopefully it'll be something that will continue. For now, because getting the permission to cross the border for one boat will be challenge enough, we're planning to create one team for now, somewhere between 6 and 10 people. So it'll be a small team. They don't have to have any prior sailing experience. We want it to be diverse. We want it to be gender equal. The aim would be to film the entire process from the first encounter, from the first moment they meet, and create an inspiring short film or documentary that we can then showcase in schools and in local events, maybe even internationally, just to raise awareness and create a positive impact.
Have you run into any specific challenges, or what do you kind of think your challenges are going to be when putting this together?
I mean, it's quite complex just because of the political situation as well in Cyprus. Creating a peace-building project through sport has been something that I've been very passionate about for a very long time, but I haven't approached it earlier because it's a very I think I would say it's been a taboo subject in my community growing up. You could see people distancing themselves from supporting bicommunal activities because they're afraid of what political stamp they will get or what other people will think or say. But the good thing is that you do see an increased interest in bicommunal activities, especially by the younger community. And of course, the biggest challenge will be to get actually the permission to cross the border.
What does being an IOC young leader mean to you?
It means a lot. I mean, I grew up playing sports most of my life. I believe that having been an athlete and an Olympian, having gone through that journey, it's just really formed me and made me who I am today. And becoming an IOC young leader has been a great honor. It really combines everything that's important to me in life. It just enables me to create a project that I'm so passionate about. And the program just gives me the skills and everything that I need to bring this to life. I just want to add, I've been really excited to be on your podcast because I just think your journey and you as a person has been so inspiring. I came across your story at least 4 years ago. And I've been following your social media accounts. I love your energy. And I love how, I mean, I'm a doctor. I see sick people every day. I love how you've gone through this really life-threatening illness and you've come out so much stronger. I just want to say, I think you're really remarkable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That just made my heart really full. What struck me about Sophia's project is how it's going to have such an impact on a personal level. The dozen or so participants will be bonded for life through problem solving, through sailing, friendships that would likely never happen without Sophia and her Young Leaders Project. But also on a global level, as she said, getting permission to cross the border with the boat will be a huge challenge, but when it happens, it will further reinforce that people, when they come together in peace and through sport, can accomplish incredible things. While LEAD is a globally recognized supporter of youth in disadvantaged communities, and he was the first Arab recipient of the prestigious Philippa's Engel Award in 2018. For his Young Leaders Project, he created the Champ Camp, an Olympic weightlifting school with a mission to build champions for life. The project has given birth to the largest women's weightlifting team in the history of the Arab world and aspires to continue breaking barriers through sport.
Hi, Amy. I'm Walid Abu Nada. I'm from Jordan. My Young Leader Project is called the Champ Camp. I set up the Champ Camp in 2017 in Jordan's largest Palestinian refugee camp. The Palestinian refugee camp is actually called the Baqa Refugee Camp, which was set up in 1968. At the time, it had around 5,000 tents for around 25,000 Palestinian refugees. Over five decades later, the camp has around 200 to 250,000 Palestinian refugees who suffer from all walks of life, really. So the Champ Camp was set up at the heart of it. The Champ Camp is essentially a sports school. It uses Olympic weightlifting to empower young boys and girls of Al Baqa refugee camp. And the model is actually quite a unique model because it's purely focused on long-term youth development. So rather than working with the hundreds of kids in the camp or thousands of kids, we're working with the same boys and girls. We've been working with them since 2017. And it's actually more rewarding because you know these kids personally. You've seen them develop in so many different metrics, character development, athletic development. And, you know, I can list many of our achievements. We've won awards in different parts of the world. We've been recognized by different media outlets. But I think our most fulfilling achievement has been giving birth to the largest women weightlifting team in the Arab world. So we have around 25 girls doing Olympic weightlifting. And it's something that's actually, you know, it's been quite difficult to get to this point. Because even in the most, let's say, liberal of societies, Olympic weightlifting is still perceived as a boy sport. So to achieve that in quite a conservative community was quite difficult, but we managed to overcome having our boys and girls never seeing their names on papers nor on any documents, to traveling the world, you know, getting medals, getting recognition from different media platforms, becoming popular in their communities, becoming local champions, essentially.
Your mission is so incredible. I'm really speechless. I mean, you're creating champions and leaders who will then be leaders and champions in their own community and inspire other people to do the same. What initially inspired you? Because you brought this to the refugee camp, but did you have a connection already?
So many different things inspired me. To begin with, sports has been a key part in so many different aspects of my life. I did competitive football growing up. Then I made the switch to Olympic weightlifting. Sports was always, for me, a way out. I always saw sports as a platform to just kind of escape from different things and to let's say, avoid entering certain routes and certain paths. I was born and raised in Jordan, but I'm originally Palestinian. So my father is from Jerusalem. My mother is from a small town near Ramallah called Sinjar. And my Palestinian identity has always been, you know, a driving factor behind my work. I first felt that when I felt my identity being contested for the first time, and that was when I moved to Spain for my studies. And, you know, the combination between identity, between passion for sports, between wanting to actually achieve tangible impact on the ground for those who continue to be affected by different things today, kind of gave birth to the Champ Camp. And obviously the Champ Camp wouldn't come to life without certain key individuals on the ground. So while I'm not originally from the camp, you know, my parents were Palestinian refugees. But while I wasn't born and raised in the camp, I do realize that in an alternative life, that could have easily been me as well. And that's why I realized it was very important to integrate local resources and to continue going with that approach.
What have your challenges been with implementing your project and program?
You know, there were so many challenges, and I still continue to face challenges today. But I think initially the first challenge was getting the trust of the local community. So while I am Palestinian, while I spoke the same language, while I shared the same identity, I still wasn't from the community. And when someone from outside comes in, there is a certain lack of trust, and I do not blame them for it. A lot of people often do interventions with good intentions most of the time, but these interventions end up causing more harm than good. You know, we always have the idea that doing something is better than nothing, but sometimes doing nothing is better than something if that something is not done right. So establishing that trust that I was there to stay, I think that took a couple of few months until I kind of was able to achieve that with the local community. So that was one. Two was, you know, doing Olympic weightlifting in general. Olympic weightlifting is not a difficult sport to implement because you need resources, you need expertise, and just socially speaking as well, it's not seen as a girl sport as well. So it was very difficult to kind of begin with that, telling individuals that, okay, we want your daughters not only doing sports, but doing Olympic weightlifting out of all sports. And then another challenge was just the sensitivity of what we were dealing with at the Champ Camp. So at the Champ Camp, we're dealing with individuals who were born into refugee camps. And I think that's what makes the case of Palestinian refugees quite distinct from other refugees across the world, because these are fourth generation refugees who have known nothing but being refugees, who have been denied their identity from the very moment they entered this world. So trying to kind of do some sort of individual development and community development through sports is quite tricky, because you're dealing with so many different sensitive things, and because the entire purpose of the Champ Camp is to give a platform for our young boys and girls to share their own individual stories as well.
And so how have you seen the Champ Camp promote peace building?
Well, depends on your definition of peace building. Because if you want to look at, let's say, the bigger picture, peace building would mean the return of all these refugees to their homes. So at the end of the day, it all depends on, you know, your definition of peace building. But if we want to, rather, instead of focusing on, let's say, peace building per se, if we want to focus on the positive development that the Champ Camp has contributed to, one, it has definitely changed the perspective towards Palestinian refugees on a global scale. So before my project, the Olympic platform, the International Olympic Committee's website, never had any coverage on any projects dealing with Palestinian refugees. And many media outlets that I've dealt with have also never had any coverage or ever talked to a Palestinian who's doing work with Palestinian refugees. That actually may be the case with you as well. It might be your first time having a chat with someone who's working with Palestinian refugees. So I think the critical element behind this is not only providing coverage, but humanizing these individuals as well. And I think that's something lacking in global media. And it's something that sports has played a critical role and a quite an important role if we want to link back to the idea of peace building here. If we want to look at also highlighting different stories, what the Champ Camp has contributed to is showing the power of young female champions as well. Our girls are young girls, that's one. Two, they're young Muslim girls. Then they're young Muslim Palestinian refugee girls. And then to add another layer to it, young Muslim Palestinian refugee girls who are doing Olympic weightlifting, who are wearing the hijab while they're, you know, doing sports. So they're already, think of the amount of, you know, disadvantages that they're dealing with from a global perspective. And that's where the Champ Camp came in and kind of overcame all these barriers. And it wasn't the Champ Camp who overcame these barriers as an entity, but rather the Champ Camp was able to provide the platform for these girls to kind of go back to an equal start, let's say, and then take on from there. So for me, that was one of our biggest successes from a tangible standpoint. Another thing would be, and I think most importantly, and this links heavily to peace building as well, is we provided our young boys and girls a purpose. And not only a purpose, we provided them with the idea that you do have the luxury to have dreams. You can also have a purpose. You can also have ambition. This is something that they never thought of before, because when you're born into that world, you have predefined roles, you have predefined responsibilities, you already know what you're going to become, and your horizons cannot expand further than that. So the Champ Camp kind of unlocked that, and it broadened those horizons. And for me, this is something that is critical, something that I've personally, you know, felt growing up, that sports gave me a purpose and can impact communities, especially when it comes to rebuilding communities from scratch.
And you're such a leader. You're showing others how to be leaders. You're making such a massive difference in the world, because that just expands, right? You teach this group of kids who then teach these groups of kids, and then all of a sudden the community is transformed. So what advice would you have for somebody who wants to make a difference in the world like you are, but they don't know where to start, or they don't feel like they have the support or the resources?
Well, the first thing, if you want to enter this space as someone young, sit down, reflect, and think about why do you really want to do this? Because if you actually find a valuable reason to why you want to enter this world of making a difference, even though I don't really like calling it making a difference, if you want to enter this world, once you have a very valid reason, and once you find a reason that you're passionate about, and you think you can actually leave big impact in it, that's when you know you're in it for the long run. And you're not in it for a week or two till you fulfill your own purposes of feeling better about yourself for whatever reason, and then just escape and allow whoever you worked with just go back to their normal life. So I think that's the first point. Never forget the purpose behind your own work as a young leader. In terms of resources, resources will always come. That's never an issue. Focus on doing the work and the resources will come.
I have one more question for you. What does being an IOC young leader mean to you?
One, it gave me a platform that I never, ever thought I would have. As someone growing up in Amman, Jordan, someone who's operating in Palestinian refugee camps, I never thought I'd be on stage in Tokyo sharing more about our work with the president of the IOC, Thomas Bach, with the president of Panasonic. The platform definitely elevated my voice. And for me, the most important part is a platform that allowed me to express my identity, share the narratives of my people, show the actual concrete work that is being done on the ground. Another thing is that the Young Leader Program built a community of like-minded individuals all across the world. And now I know that if I need anything in Panama, if I need anything in Spain, if I need anything in Germany, in Japan, in China, and I can name literally every single country in the world, I know someone who is completely passionate about using sports for impact, whether it's for expertise, whether it's for input, for insight, for perspective, or just if I want to have a place to crash in if I ever visit their country.
I am in awe of Waleed and his project and the change that he's making for so many people. I really can't stop thinking about how he's helping so many who have so many reasons to not believe in hope and to not believe in peace. He's giving them something to believe in. People who are disadvantaged through no circumstance of their own deserve every opportunity to find a better way. And with the Champ Camp, Waleed is restoring hope and self-confidence to people who desperately need it. Waleed's project is the absolute definition of peace building, and I am so proud to now know him. Mercedes is a former member of the Women's Sabre National Fencing Team of Guatemala. She also holds a master's in sports management and a bachelor's in international relations. Mercedes is going to work with other youth leaders in local communities in Guatemala and Peru to improve access to sports and physical activities.
Hi, Amy. My name is Mercedes Haro, and I am half Guatemalan, half Peruvian, 100% Latina, and I'm actually currently living in the Middle East in Jordan. And my IOC Young Leaders project is about how to integrate social responsible principles into the organization of sports activities in Latin America. I want to create small initiatives in the communities where usually they don't have access to sports activities and have them organize these initiatives by themselves, meaning that all the resources and everything has to come from the community and involvement of the community. I want to help them believe and get this buy-in, you know, that sports is a tool for actual achieving social development.
How did you get involved with peace building? How did that become really important to you?
For me, actually, when I started doing sports myself, I kind of like came from a little bit of like a privileged background. Let's say, you know, I have access to a good education. I came from a stable family. But a lot of the athletes, not only in Guatemala, which is where I started and most of my life I've been there, most of the athletes come from really humble backgrounds. So really, sports is the only way for them to overcome poverty or gang violence or drugs or even violence within their homes, you know. So it was really powerful for me to see the commitment of these young children because they depended so much sometimes on the help or the scholarships that they will get. And it really showed me, you know, how can they improve their lives? How can they get opportunities, you know, to be engaged in something that is positive and meaningful to them?
And so being an athlete myself, I understand the importance of sport and how they bring people together, resolve conflict. But can you give an example of that for the audience?
We have plenty of examples in Latin America, I think, but it's also how you see conflict. Because, for example, here in Jordan, I've seen a lot of these projects being done with social cohesion between refugee communities and host communities. But also, like, as I was saying, in Latin America, we have a lot of like gang problems or violence problems. You can also see it in this generation or in this youth that wants to break this cycle of violence within probably their family or their community or the group of friends that they belong to. So I think it really depends how you will see the effect or the success of one of these programs.
Right. I mean, how it kind of equalizes the playing field. And you're part of a team or you're high-fiving each other because you're kind of in the same headspace when you're playing a sport together. And it allows you to just kind of let everything else kind of fall to the wayside. And you're just connecting with each other as humans. So sport is so important. We talk about it a lot for physical health and well-being. But I don't think we talk about it enough as far as bringing communities together. So I think it's going to have an enormous impact.
To be honest, I hope so, because I feel like we have largely underestimated the role of sports in our communities and in our societies, because it is an investment in human capital in so many ways. And with your human capital, you know, opportunities at limitless, you know, you have people that is more engaged, let's say, in terms of education, or they have more values that they can apply to other areas of their life. It teaches discipline, also in your health, as we are saying, psychosocial well-being. Even economic development, you know, there is a huge industry. If you are able to put together a league that is attractive enough for people to pay to come watch, you know, it's also a gain in so many ways.
And that's so important. What types of sports are you hoping will be a part of your initiative?
This will really depend on what the community has already access to, because in Latin America, most of the sports systems rely heavily on government funding. And this is limited when you are comparing it, you know, to other priorities like health or education. So what I want them to do is, if they have access to such sporting activities, you know, or maybe sometimes even just a park, what can you do in that space? If it's about rehabilitating a football pitch, then try to organize something to keep it rehabilitated. If you need, for example, a coach that can come and teach you about the sport, they can do it. I was actually even thinking it would be really cool and really interesting if there is someone that will be willing to set up like an elderly program, for example. A lot of the times when you go to a federation, you only see young people engaging in sports, because usually that's the talent area where then later you can develop into an elite athlete. But there is also elderly people that, you know, they want to engage in physical activities. So maybe there is a volunteer that will want to start a program like this, because a lot of the people in the community, they're old, they're retired, or maybe they are housewives and they want to get away and do something like this. So it would really depend on their needs and their interests.
I'm going to ask you one last question. What does being an IOC young leader mean to you?
For me, it means actually the platform in which I can voice my ideas and try to advocate for what I believe in. For me, sports have been largely underestimated. It's fairly recent, a new field. There is not a lot of, like, I mean, they're having initiatives about sports for development in Latin America, but not a lot. And I also feel like we should take this change forward, the value of it, that it can help us achieve so many things. And but we need to invite everyone and open the conversation. And I think this hasn't happened yet. We just traditionally think of sports as just something, you know, recreational or physical activity, and that's it.
Mercedes Project highlighted something really powerful about peace building and sports. The more opportunities that can be created using sports as a unifier, a common ground, the more likely that walls will start to come down. Sports make the world smaller and give people a chance to connect over a shared bond. And that is where peace building begins. Thank you to the International Olympic Committee and the young leaders who joined me today, Mercedes, Sophia, and Walid. Their commitment to bringing people together and connecting communities through sports is so needed in the world today. Thank you once again to Panasonic. They are the founding partner of the Young Leaders Program, and we appreciate their continued commitment to supporting positive change all over the globe in so many important areas. More information and links are available in the show notes of this episode. Please make sure, if you loved today's program, that you subscribe to Bouncing Forward so you don't miss any of our future episodes. And if you use Instagram, I would love to hear from you and know what your thoughts are. Thank you for listening to We Have a Goal, a special series of Bouncing Forward.